It's the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores. Capital Mazda, Stevens Creek Mazda, Concord Mazda, and Team Mazda. Hey, it's Sean Del Gran. And this April, we've got outstanding offers on brand new Mazdas. Plus, we've partnered with One Tree Planted to help reforest areas of Northern California. We pledge to plant one tree for every vehicle we sell. Don't miss the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores in San Jose, Concord, and Vallejo.
Eklund with a shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light.
Star! Fabian centered on a one-time pass. Splits the defense, has a chance. Deke shoots, score! A spectacular rush from end to end by Mikael Granlund.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Bortolo wins the draw. Addison at the point doesn't shoot. Goes to Granlund, goes to Bortolo, feeds it across. Shot, score! William Eklund from Bortolo. That's a spectacular execution of a power play, and the Sharks are back in the game. Now they're only down 3-2 as Eklund picks up the goal for Eklund, his 12th of the year.
Yeah, I just thought we really weren't as sharp as we have been, particularly early on with the puck. I thought we turned it over quite a bit. I didn't like our physicality or lack thereof. I mean, two of the goals are clearly just getting beat one-on-one. So, you know, we're better than that, and we have been better than that. But unfortunately, I think we're slow closing on people. I thought they just had way, way too much room all night long. Even when we closed, we were better in the second for sure. But, you know, I just saw we were really fighting it all night.
All right. Good morning, everyone. The San Jose Sharks did not have their best performance of the year last night. They did not have their worst performance of the year last night. And in a fashion of losing compared to some of the games we have seen as of late, such as Saturday night's meltdown when they gave up 5 unanswered to Chicago after having a 4-0 lead, or the third period letdown against Tampa, or the bad ends to at Nashville and at Chicago. I think that was one that we are going to be more pleased with. And I keep on going over this from the perspective of what are you looking at from the end? Are the guys still fighting? I think ultimately, yes. Last night, you had a team that fell down 3-0, and that was hardly the end of the game. Now, counterpoint, yes, you do not want to fall down 3-0. If you watched any of NBC pre and post last night, I was on with Brody. That was my turning point, falling down 3-0. You can come back from a 3-0 deficit. You can win a game that you're down 3-0 in. However, once you go down 3-0, you're making life very, very difficult on yourselves. And that's just a tough deficit to come down from. The Sharks have done it before. They have been able to have these wild comebacks even this year. However, I would not say that is my quote unquote plan of attack, but you saw them fight to get back into it. Barabanov, who has not been himself this year, I don't know if there are lingering issues with his injury or what exactly, but to be blunt, he just hasn't looked like himself, but he finally got his first goal since early January. That's a good sign. That's a rectification of sorts. Then you get William Eklund continuing his scoring, which until about the last week had quieted down. That's another thing you want to see because, as we talked about last night, he is the future of the San Jose Sharks. He is somebody that has great ability. I know that they've talked about his being dropped on the lines was not a demotion. It was more about having a simplified game plan for him and allowing him to focus on things a little bit more, maybe play a game that he didn't have to think about as much or was more reactive. And I think we've seen that from William Eklund. Wherever he's out there on the ice, I think he's putting himself in a good position, and he's still a young player. He is still growing. I'm sure he's probably putting a lot of pressure on himself to try and perform at a high level. And then Clem Kostin comes through with what I felt was a really just staggering shot of a goal. I mean, that puck erupted off his stick. He goes upstairs. He gets the Sharks a third goal, but at that point, they'd still been surrendering goals. And, you know, you score 3 goals in a period after being down 3-0. That wasn't enough. And that's the difficulty with the Sharks is that even when they are making life easier on themselves, even when they're trying to get themselves back into it, they're still doing other things at the same time that are not making life any easier on themselves. They make it 3-1, they make it 3-2, they go down 4-2, they make it 4-3, and then suddenly it's 5-3. They're not able to fight back anymore into the third. Dallas adds on 6-3. That's your final. And yeah, Dallas is a very good team, guys. I think they are a very, very legit contender to win the Stanley Cup. I think that that's got to be part of the takeaway that you have from last night's game. Not that I'm trying to, you know, make excuses or anything like that, but Dallas is very good. Dallas also has had trouble with San Jose in two previous games this year, and I would not say that they coasted through last night's game, but what they did, more importantly, is they gave themselves a buffer. They were up 3-0 for a time in this game, and yes, even though their third goal was followed very shortly thereafter by a goal from the Sharks, they scored 14 seconds into the second period. The Sharks scored 54 seconds into the second period. That was still a 3-0 lead. If you take away those first two goals, or the second goal, or the third goal, and it's only 2-0, or it's only 1-0, however you want to look at it, that changes the entire complexion of the game. And we can play the ifs and buts game all over the place about what could have occurred, but what happened was actually the Sharks fell in a big hole early, showed nice competitive comeback to get themselves back into the game, but ultimately that was going to be too little, too late, just to get themselves the real type of momentum that they needed to take over that game, especially against a team as good as Dallas. I mean, they had that incredible comeback earlier this year. The Sharks did against Detroit. Detroit is not Dallas. I think that if it had been a lesser opponent, I think maybe if you get those first two goals, it's 3-2 at home. The wind starts changing, starts filling your sails. You've got momentum. But against Dallas, I think Dallas wasn't going to let that happen. Dallas is a really good team. And I know I'm not trying to make excuses, but if you look at their, you know, home and away records, they're nearly identical. They've got quality wins at home and away against teams like Carolina recently. And that's since the other side of the All-Star break. So we're talking about the last few weeks, the last 4, 5, 6 weeks. They thrashed Nashville, I think 9-2, who beat the Sharks recently 8-2. I mean, these are the types of wins that they have had along the way, and they beat Winnipeg. They beat the Kings, recently. It's just, they're a very good team, and it's not the only narrative, but it is a narrative, and it is something that you have to look at when you're trying to take in the game. And you would hope that the Sharks do find a bounce out of this one to show, hey, bad start. They were able to get themselves back into it. Let's see if we have an opportunity like that against a team that is not quite as good. I think that the game coming up against Minnesota on the road and St. Louis on the road, those are teams that I would recognize as quote-unquote not as good. I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but they are distinctly different in their record, both Minnesota and St. Louis, than what you see coming out of Dallas. All right, let's get into some of the highlights out of this one. Down 3-0, it was Alexander Barabanov who got the Sharks back into it.
Sharks move back in to the Dallas zone, front of the point, shoots it toward the net, deflected, just trickle wide of Wedgwood. Root is in deep, acting like a forward. Forecheck, nobody else is doing it, so he might as well. Because now it's work free behind the net, and it's in front, they score! William Eklund gets a pass from Ruda, and then right in front of the goal, a golden opportunity snapped home by Alexander Barabanov, ending a 26-game goalless drought to get the Sharks on the board 54 seconds into the second period.
So a quick response from San Jose, who found themselves down 3-0, just 14 seconds into the first period. Alexander Barabanov, with his first goal since early January, got the Sharks on the board. It's 3-1. And then William Eklund got the Sharks rolling once again.
Bortolo wins the draw. Addison at the point doesn't shoot. Goes to Granlund. Goes to Bortolo. Feeds it across. Shot, score! William Eklund from Bortolo. That's a spectacular execution of a power play. And the Sharks are back in the game. Now they're only down 3-2 as Eklund picks up the goal for Eklund, his 12th of the year.
Big response. In a real hurry, the Sharks go from a 3-0 deficit to being down 3-2 just 2 minutes into the third. But this is where the buffer that Dallas had really comes into play. Those first two goals and really the 3-0 lead, as it was about 6 minutes after that. Jamie Benn puts the Dallas Stars back up by a score of 4-2.
Johnston across the line, dropped past Stankoven, had a back checker on him in McDonald, so as he tried to accept the pass, it knocked in front, but now in front of the goal, the Stars score! Right after a good defensive play, the puck went deep, and Jamie Benn is in the slot, puts it up top off a weird bounce from behind the goal, and Dallas takes a 4-2 lead.
And this was another moment where I really wanted to see how the Sharks would respond, because you get yourself back into the game. It goes from 3-0 to 3-2. You feel like you've got your momentum on your side. And then suddenly you see that Dallas is able to wipe that off, and it just seemingly doesn't matter. They go back up by a score of 4-2. But once again, the Sharks with a very quick response. It's 4-2. And then Kleem Costin, who continues to be just very effective since joining the Sharks, makes it a 4-3 game.
Here's Costin moving in, shooting it. Score! Costin moves in on the left wing side. And that stick had eyes at the end of it, because where those eyes were looking is where the puck ended up. Low to the glove side of goaltender Wedgewood. Kleem Costin makes it a 4-3 game.
And again, great work by the Sharks to get themselves back into it, but the buffer played a role once again. The Sharks had scored 3 goals in that period, but also you give up one at 14 seconds of the second, which made it 3-0. And then as soon as you make it 4-3, just about a minute and 15 seconds later, Wyatt Johnston scores his second of the night and gives Dallas back a multi-goal lead.
Barabanov was trying to set up the screen in front. Here comes Dallas. They pick it up. Uh-oh, Johnston's got a breakaway. Moves in, backhander, score! Oh, man, Wyatt Johnston is having a series for the ages against the Sharks. He gets behind the San Jose defense, and he beats Blackwood with a backhander to make it 5-3, Dallas.
At this point, the game management abilities of Dallas came into play, as that was about the halfway mark of the second period. It's 5-3. They did not score again until the 11:45 mark of the third period. And at that point, Dallas had taken control of the game. The Sharks were not getting as many good looks. At times, they were chasing offense. They were not as sharp. There were some turnovers. They moved that out of their game in the second period with the puck management, but it kind of came back to haunt them a bit more in the third period once again. And yeah, you're reaching. You're trying to make something happen. You're trying to give yourself an opportunity. But, you know, Dallas, Jason Robertson, that's his second of the night. It's 6-3.
It's Robertson stick-handling down the wing into the corner. Throws a backhand pass right point. There's Haskinen moving to his left. Feeds top of the circle. Robertson shoots and scores. Second goal for Jason Robertson, number 26 on the year. This one is a power play goal, and Dallas takes a 6-3 lead.
That would be too much for the Sharks to find their way back from. Dallas has an impressive victory, and the Sharks are left once again on the losing side of things. The Sharks have now lost 8 in a row and 17 out of their last 18. Their last win was on Saturday, March 9th against Ottawa. A brilliant 2-1 win that I think was very, very fun. And there have been opportunities along the way. The game at Philadelphia, the game against Columbus, Chicago, obviously Saturday night. And I think they've got good opportunities coming up on Thursday, tomorrow, and on Saturday when they're at St. Louis. And then they get their last extended homestand of the year, starting off the month of April. Starts off hosting Seattle on Monday the 1st, and then on Thursday the 4th, they are playing host to LA. Saturday the 6th, they've got St. Louis, and then Sunday the 7th, it's Arizona. Both of those are 3 o'clock starts, so I am excited for those. Tuesday the 9th, they've got Calgary, and then they're on the road at Seattle on the 11th. Then they're home for their final home game of the year, the 13th, hosting Minnesota, and then it's going to be at Edmonton on the 15th and at Calgary on the 18th to finish up their year. And one of the things that we talked about last night was the idea of what the Sharks are trying to make out of this final stretch of the season. And to me, it is about from now until April 18th, regardless of how the wins and losses come, regardless of the numbers specifically, but you have to start looking at the individual effort of guys and how they're playing and how they're showing that they want to be here. Because I think that, yeah, you have the idea that everybody wants to be in the NHL, but who wants to be a Shark? Who wants to go through the tough times that are still on the horizon for this team? Who wants to go through what is still coming for San Jose through this rebuild? And I think there are some guys who have shown they do want to be here. And I think it's figuring out who else wants to be here while the team goes through that. And I think that's the hardest part right now for San Jose, is figuring out for David Quinn and Mike Grier, who are the guys that want to be here? Who are the guys that are the future of the Sharks? Who are the guys that can deal with what the team has been going through this year and next year, which I don't think next year is going to be as bad as this year, but I do think that there's still going to be tough times ahead for the San Jose Sharks as they situate themselves to be one of the best teams in the league in hopefully a few years' time. That is what is trying to happen here. It's not like the Sharks are trying to be bad for the sake of bad, as some, let's call them bad actors on social media, would like to imply that this is just a hapless franchise. No, this is the plan. This is what you have to do to be good again in the NHL, and suggesting otherwise, in my opinion, is disingenuous. Maybe you can say that you didn't expect it to be this bad, But I would also say that you probably didn't expect it to be that good for that long. All right, we're going to take a break. On the other side, we are going to talk with Brody Brazil. You're on Morning Tide, presented by Coors Light on the Sharks Audio Network.
That to-do list you have needs one more thing. Chill. It's an easy thing to do. Just crack open an ice-cold Coors Light and chill. Take the afternoon off and binge-watch anything. Go to happy hour and stay for a couple hours. Who's counting anyways? Or hang out with just your dog because you've had enough human interaction this week. Whatever you do, do it with a Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. 2020 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Celebrate responsibly.
Welcome back to Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light.
All right, we now have joining us on the Sharks Audio Network, it is Brody Brazil, the host of Sharks pre- and post-game live on NBC Sports California. Brody, something that was brought to my attention the other day, and I wanted to get your take on this all day, and I saved it for now.
Uh-oh.
How long will it take the Sharks to get the losing out of their system as a team? Most specifically, we saw the five straight goals which they gave up to Chicago on Saturday night. This game tonight, in which they gave up three unanswered to start the game, couldn't really get themselves back into it despite a good pushback. Is that something that takes seasons, or can it be turned around relatively more quickly than what I guess maybe some people fear?
Are you asking for the team to get back to an overall 500 record, or are you saying they need to stop going into these ruts of 11 and 12 and 9 and 8 game losing skills?
I just mean more of an individual game, like in these games, and not just specifically Saturday night, in which they had a 4-0 lead and they couldn't win. They got a 6-3 lead against Dallas, the same team they played tonight, and then lost 7-6 in overtime.
You're asking when do you think it'll be that they manage leads better?
Correct, yeah.
I think that is a major milestone along the way. Not to name drop here, but you know, since I'm a YouTuber now, I was talking to the hockey guy, our mutual friend.
Yes, the man.
And we were talking about what are the major milestones of a rebuilding team like the Sharks, things we can look forward to and expect. I mean, look, the teardown, basically up to this point, if that's what we want to call it, the teardown is largely complete.
Yeah.
So everything from here should now be building the team and moving forward. And so I think one of the major milestones is obviously, when are you a break-even type team? When are you a win as many as you lose as many in a season type team? And I think at that point, as soon as you get near the 500 threshold or the points threshold of a 500 team, that's when you have to assume that your club can have a 1-2 goal lead and manage the slimmest of margins down the stretch. I mean, to your point, two games ago now, we saw the Sharks with a 4-goal lead and they couldn't hang on to that against one of the most volatile opponents in the league, somebody you could and should have put away. So I don't know the exact answer to that. I know that it's somewhere along the line, but I'm not here to tell you that I think that's like a next year thing even. I think that is something that's down the line, because really that's one of the final steps. Once you are good enough to build yourself leads and then manage leads, I don't want to say there's not much more to it than that, but I think we're still a ways away right now from seeing that.
You were talking about some of those numbers involved with the losing streaks we've seen this year for the Sharks. Can you rehash that for me?
Oh, I don't want to. 11, 12.
11 to start the season, by the way.
12 was, I forget even when. I try to forget when they were. 11, 12, 9, and then there was one win, and now right after that, we're on an 8-game skid right now, too. And I brought that up not because I want to, because I thought what you were saying is maybe how to get away from that long of stretches without tasting winning, you know. And I think that's another sign. I mean, that's another milestone this team is going to have to go through of, hey, when can they stop the rut at 2 and 3 games and then end it and pick up a win? And even if they were to lose another 2 or 3 more, never let it get to 5, 6, 7, 8, 12, or 11, you know, 11 or 12.
I'm not disagreeing, but doesn't that come down to talent?
Of course.
I mean, more than anything else.
What, I mean, this Sharks team right now has been depleted by a couple major injuries all season. They also knew it was a rebuilding season going in. They're also past the trade deadline, where you don't even have a Kakinen, or obviously a Tomas Hertl was injured and then traded. Logan Couture's been out all season. I don't think it's fair for anybody to say, well, they're not performing up to standards. They are what they are right now. The question is, if you're Mike Greer and company, what do you do with some salary cap flexibility in space next season. And one of my big questions is, looking at a Zetterlund, looking at an Eklund, and others, a Bortolo, what do you want to surround them with next year? Because if those are the guys you're banking on, and I think they largely are, what do you want the rest of the team to look like? What are those complementary pieces? And what do you do, finally, with a little bit of breathing room in the cap?
You do have breathing room. I think they're still going to try and take on bad contracts to acquire more draft capital or more prospect capital.
Yeah.
But I think they are probably going to look for more players like Luke Cunnan and Nico Sturm and some of these other guys they've brought in that have the mentality that they appreciate. Matt Benning's another guy who I think has the right mentality, and when he's been healthy, he's been a good right. player. Unfortunately, he suffered, you know, the major hip injury and had to have his season shut down early. But I wouldn't expect them to sign any star players, but I think they're going to bring in mentality players. And I think that will allow two things: a better mindset to be across the team, A, and B, allow a little bit more of that onus to be placed on the Zetterlunds, the Eklunds, the Bortolos of the world, to where they realize they do have to be the drivers of the offense. They do have to be the guys who gets it done, who get it done.
I wonder how much value we put on having a leader by example or a leader by their veteran nature. Like, if you were to go out and acquire a more expensive free agent, I mean, I think you'd also have to be confident that you could move that person
right.
if it ultimately came down to needing to do that next year by the deadline. But also, what would the value be? Like, again, I think anything you do, any moves you make, kind of surround the future of your team more than they even surround what's best for next season, if that makes any sense.
It does, because every move has to be viewed in the sense of what does this do for when we're competitive.
Development, right? Yeah. So that's a big question. Can I pause? Nobody can see us right now.
No.
Right? Obviously, it's just two microphones, you and I. You failed to mention that I'm doing a Joe Thornton tribute for the Morning Tide.
By what are you covering up?
I've not.
I'm
not wearing anything right
okay,
now.
Okay, you're going about that aspect of it. There's so many aspects of a Joe Thornton interview. I didn't score 4 goals tonight, neither did you. So, you know.
I also want to shout out Jonathan Becker, Sharks team president, because I know he listens to all these, and I think he might find that Joe Thornton visual. See, like, you can play with the mind here, right? I can leave it up to your imagination. If I say I'm doing a Joe Thornton tribute, how do you expect I'm doing this interview side by side with you? Because the public doesn't have to know, nor do they want to know. But
they don't. Well, you know, maybe some do want to know.
Let's just say there's a small towel between you and I, and that's about it. So. True jumbo style. Sorry, totally threw you off
there. Well, you know, you got to keep me on my toes, Brody. That's the most important thing about all this. What do you think is going through David Quinn's mind right now? Because he, again, I've told people this year when they complain, if you think this is on him, then you don't know hockey.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like he's doing the same thing over and over, where he's pushing the boulder up the hill, where he's giving the guys the correct assignments, telling them what to do. And when they look like they're starting to do the right thing, it all comes rolling down the hill again. Like, Saturday night was a prime example of that. Or even tonight, when they got themselves back into the game, there was still some carelessness with the puck. They made some defensive mistakes. They started following the puck a little bit much, chasing offense, and then things get away from them again.
I think for him, it's the same way we're judging the team. Like, it's on development. And at this point for David Quinn, which is crazy because most NHL head coaches are saying, well, wins and losses are the name of your game. And the more wins you get, the more chips you've stacked up and kind of the more insurance you have. Every head coach wants that in their job. And to know that when times aren't good, the people look back and say, well, we know what they're like when times are good. Mm-hmm. David Quinn has never been a part of the Sharks, obviously, in these almost two full seasons now, where they've been competitive, but they've been a project. They've been part of a teardown. Now they're going to be part of the restocking and the rebuild of that, a restocking part of that rebuilding process. It's really tough to judge him against anything else. We don't really have a standard. I suppose it's how fast players are developing. But even that, I mean, how much of that can a coach actually control? It's up to those players. It's up to their experiences. It's to try and surround them with good experiences. So, look, I don't know off the top of my head what the initial contract was with David Quinn, but I would certainly say I hope that he is in line to be behind the bench next year and for the time being. And I also fully recognize how this goes a lot of times. In a rebuild, it sometimes takes multiple head coaches to get you back to where you ultimately want to be. I'm just here to say that until David Quinn is given the right tools, it's difficult to ask him to do the right job that you want him to ultimately be doing when he doesn't necessarily have the roster to actually take care of that?
Well, this is what you can look at. And you, as Mike Greer, know that you can probably play that role of getting rid of one head coach and moving to the next one only so many times. Why not hold off on that move? And I know this is not how professional sports usually works, but why not hold off and let things develop under Quinn until you are sure that a coach is or is not the issue?
The right guy, yeah. And I agree. I think we're both on the same page, maybe for different reasons, like I said. I mean, I also think that if you were to even consider that notion right now, you'd have to come to me with a prime example of somebody for sure who was going to do a better job of developing, and you got to give me 100 reasons why. This is not to take away from Quinn's resume. I'm saying for you to even have the notion of doing something different right now, it would have to be different. I think consistency is important. I think the same messaging is important. And, you know, look, I would ask around the room, like, you know, what the young guys are feeling about themselves, what they're feeling about the situation. Are they comfortable? Do they have everything they need? I would ask people internally about that. I want David Quinn to get a legitimate chance to coach this team when they're on the upswing. And then we can talk about this. Honestly, until that's even the situation, I don't even think it's worth our conversation, to be honest with you.
It's just, it's a topic that comes up. Yeah. And that's why, you know, people are going to be looking at it and they're going to say, well, these first 2 years, it hasn't gone well. To which I always say, well, it wasn't supposed to go well.
Are you watching the games or are you just looking at the stats, right? Yeah. Because if you're just looking, again, traditionally at what most head coaches are judged on, then yeah, the record is not really good. And that's obvious. And we all know that. But if you're watching game to game, and honestly, how many times can Quinn push buttons that most head coaches resort to, kind of challenging the players, not being critical of them, but, you know, pulling their strings? He can't do that because he doesn't necessarily have the right horses to be in those positions.
But what I appreciate, Brody, is that I see good efforts from the Sharks. It's mistake laden.
Yeah.
But I still see good effort. And that's what I always go back to, is that if a team is still fighting, if a team is still showing, you know, it could have gotten really ugly after those 10-2 and 10-1 losses in November, but it didn't. Instead, the team responded. And each time they've gone through one of these longer stretches, the team keeps on fighting throughout the losing. Now, that may not always be reflected in the results, but when I watch the team, I say, this is a team that is not, it's a talent deficit. It's not the fact that they have just abandoned what they should be doing or they don't believe they can win. I think they are trying and fighting. I think that often the odds are very much stacked against them in a way where they have to be nearly perfect for it to end up with them on the winning side of things.
Yeah, I mean, their margin for error is so slim, right? And just, again, until this team has actually added some more of the future pieces. Like, they do exist, and they're kind of all over the place. Yeah. And Quentin Musty's doing his thing, and Will Smith is doing his thing, and
Ken Yoni.
You've literally got talent all over the place. Not even at one level, you know, which is crazy. It's not like you're saying we're looking at the Barracuda. They are the future right now. There's a couple guys there. Ozzie Weisblatt even is not even there right now. Mm-hmm. Been loaned out, but obviously, It's a core of players in a bunch of different spots right now. It's going to take a little bit of time, but eventually that will funnel all to the Sharks. And I think when that time comes, that's when we'll start looking at a team that's on the upswing that we're hopefully looking at in the near future.
Yes, I hope too it is in the near future. And like we were saying, looking at SAP Center, its location, its overall just, it's a very stark sight in any skyline, but especially in San Jose. You're hopping on 87 or you're anywhere near the arena, you see it. It's always a good sight. It just, we're waiting for those days where it's like it was.
It's amazing for me. This is year 15, and the first 10 were all playoffs, for the most part, playoffs, Western Finals, mm-hmm. Stanley Cup Final, Jumbo, Patty, Pavs, Dan Boyle, Logan, Heater, Hurdle. I mean, it go on and on. And now we're on the outside looking in for what's going to be five straight seasons. And it just, it will never feel right. I think the tone was set by the Sharks, you know, beyond the first couple years of expansion, and then they got good, and then they struggled a little bit, but then got good again.
Got really good forever. I mean,
they've never been, as a franchise, where they're at right now, 5 years on the outside looking in. And I think we all got spoiled to a large degree. But to your point, there are so many things still in place about the Sharks. They've already gained their reputation in the Bay Area. You know, and to be perfectly honest, if they're good in a couple years, I really think it times out with the marketplace of having fans come back, being ready to, I mean, look, they support the team always, but they're going to be a lot more interested and excited when this roster has some players that are can't-miss type guys. You need to go out and see them play. And I just don't think right now, while they're in this process, that maybe they're in that same level of attraction.
Brody Brazil, everyone, we are out of time for the San Jose Sharks. I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
You've been listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light on the Sharks Audio Network.